September 28th, 1967, at Fordham, 8024.
Marshal, do you want to stand up? Or what's your brother's?
I'll probably alternate. And if I sit, I'll probably be able to stay more consistently near the mic here. By the way, something occurs to me from the morning paper. An old cliche from the New York Times, all the news that's fit to print. Please meditate a little bit on that phrase. And it's full of ambiguities. It's a real lulu. But in practice, the New York Times prints all news in a form that suits the printed page. It doesn't print news, doesn't matter what the news is, it doesn't print news,
Daniel,
in an auditory way. Headlines scream. They're not visual, they're auditory. The New York Times doesn't print auditory news, only printed news. It translates all news into a printed form. That's what it means, fit to print. All the news that will fit the printed word. Or we print all news in the form of print, not in the form of hearing or feeling.
You guys get that? The when someone leaves, it fucks up, knocks out an important syllable. You can't lose any syllable, so please, if you can, do not leave. The door is being locked. You have to stay in the room here.
How come that started happening? That didn't used to happen.
I know. It happened a few weeks ago. I don't know what button I hit that makes it happen, but we're stuck with it until Bill tells me how to get rid of it.
Okay.
All right, so let's go back a bit, and so you don't miss any word.
It's a real lulu. But in practice, the New York Times prints all news in a form that suits the printed page. It doesn't print news, doesn't matter what the news is, it doesn't print news in an auditory way. Headlines scream. They're not visual, they're auditory. The New York Times doesn't print auditory news, only printed news. It translates all news into a printed form. That's what it means, fit to print. All the news that will fit the printed word. Or we print all news in the form of print, not in the form of hearing or feeling.
Just left.
In other words,
conference.
It's a literary newspaper, and all the news appears in editorial form. As far as I know, the only newspaper in North America that prints news as editorials.
Wasn't that the same point as the last time? I'll redo that. Okay. No, not here.
Or feeling. In other words, it's a literary newspaper, and all the news appears in editorial form. As far as I know, the only newspaper in North America that prints news as editorials. And this is really worth study. I don't know how conscious they are of this. I'm not sure whether they are completely aware of what they're doing in this matter and have considered all the alternatives or not. Another feature, you see, that makes that is incompatible with this print form that the Times uses is the comic strip. They can't have comics. Comics are not fit to print because they don't belong to the printed form. Comics are tactile, sculptured icons. You were hearing about icons yesterday. One of Mr. Barker's themes of yesterday will be my starting off point, Surah. The technique that Surah used for getting his image onto the canvas was that of little points, little flakes. And the light came through these points, not on to them. Rear view projection is his technique, light through. And when you have light through, audience participation is much greater. When you have light on, audience participation is almost zero. The person becomes a spectator looking at a picture, just like a movie. There's no participation there. That's why the thing is called escapist. Nobody ever called TV escapism. Surah is very much like TV, very involving, very mosaic-like, very much light through. James Joyce calls TV the charge of the light barricade. The light comes through, charges at the viewer. It's an X-ray form. TV is X-ray. Not pictures.
I think you know, Marshall, I could probably talk about that a little bit. That the quality of picture making is one where you stand back and look at it. And the quality of the TV image is one where you stand and you're barraged by it. You know, this is the input. I was looking at a paper tonight. I'm thinking that they had a camera in the front of a bomber that was moving over Vietnam. And this whole photograph was charged with all the shots that were coming up from below. I thought to myself, you know, this is a kind of TV image, because they have about 800 cartridges shooting at them, and they all make light. They're all light tracers. They all come across the sky in various ways. I thought, this is this is kind of the way the world is, and this is the way you have to accept it. But the TV image as such is shooting tracers at you at about 800 per second, and believe it.
Anyone subjected to these tracers, to this bombardment, any child growing up in front of such a barricade naturally has an experience unknown to any previous generation. And those children who learned to read and write before TV are a very different crowd from those who learned to read and write just after TV. There is a sense in which the over 21s are a lost generation, in the sense that they will never be able to make the same sensory adaptation that the under 21s have made to this new environment of X-ray tracer shots. Those who had learned to read, in other words, to develop their visual sense in a very high degree before television, have a sort of cushion or immunity against TV. Well, those who didn't get those immunizing shots before they went to school or before they sat in front of TV have just a different attitude toward their sensory experience. The involvement business, the whole hippie world, is straight TV involvement. And the use of all the senses at once. Whereas the literate man coming up out of his reading and writing courses uses primarily the visual sense as the point of orientation for all the other senses. But this isn't possible, I think, for the those who experience TV before they learn to read and write. It would be fascinating to know what's going on in various parts of the world as a result of TV. That is, Swedish or English or German culture, people in that environment of sensory life, would have a very different response to TV from, say, the French.
Well, we know, Marshall, that what was the name of the president of Israel? Ben-Gurion, where he refused to have TV in because he said that what was going to happen, he was going to cool down the audience, and he didn't want to cool down the audience because he was very much aware that there was a war about 3 years in the offing, and he didn't want to cool down the audience. He wanted to hot them up. So no TV in Israel for that period of time.
Well, you can see that the hippie attitude toward Vietnam is cool in the sense of involved. War is ordinarily a hot situation, but a TV generation is so involved that war becomes unbearable. There's no detachment possible. And the old literate generation is detached. War is easy for a literate man because he doesn't allow himself to get involved, even when he has a rifle. He can still stay detached. And the visual sense is the only sense we have that gives detachment. Movement, touch, hearing, etc. are very involved senses. There's no detachment possible. Except for the visual, there is no detachment possible to mankind. That is why all the backward countries, so-called, live by ear, not by eye. They're totally involved, totally turned on. Our Negro population in North America has reacted to TV in ways that are widely noticeable. They're real turned on by this instrument. They feel really at home in the world for the first time. The old literate culture alienated them, degraded them, rejected them. TV accepts them and turns them on totally. All right. This is an utterly unexpected experience. And when they have it, they turn around and they look at the old environment of print and literacy, police forces, all the institutions that go with literacy. And they're enraged. The enemy is right here with them. Their new favorable environment of TV and electricity is juxtaposed immediately with the old, hated environment that rejected them and left them out in the cold. The literate man is not very hospitable to tribal societies. He regards them as the lesser breeds without the law, to use Kipling's phrase. Literate people have always, at least during the periods of literacy, always taken this attitude of condescending to all non-literate societies or semi-literate. But this isn't possible anymore with TV. We are retribalizing ourselves. It is the top elites of the Western world that are being tribalized. That is why the Vietnam War is so unbearable, because here we are trying to westernize the East with our old technology, 19th century weaponry, while orientalizing ourselves at home. The conflict here between purposes, goals, is total and is unconscious. Orientalizing ourselves by electricity, westernizing the East by machinery, the old machines. It goes without saying, in terms of this, that when the East gets TV and electricity, they will get turned on as never before.
That is very dangerous.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that is a very dangerous thing. I'd like to pass it down to Father John here.
Cut, Mike, the war thing, it seems to me, is one of the places where these differences come out very strong. I was in high school, I guess, during the Second World War, and it was no TV. And your experience of the war, if you were at home in kind of your situation now, was through newspaper reports and through, I'd say, I don't know, maybe 60% of the movies, some of the stuff you see on The Late Show now, were movies about the war. And they were very simple movies about the war. They were recruiting posters for the most part. They were very patriotic kind of things to sustain the morale and push up the juices of the people back home. And there was none of the dissent with the war that now exists. Now, admitting the differences in the type of war and things like that. But notice in this war, no movie about this war. The only one that's being contemplated is John Wayne is going to go out there. Nobody will give him money to do it. He has to do it with his own money. There's just a complete different feeling in the belly about this particular war. And I think the television thing is one of the most crucial differences. Especially with, you get these awful, the Anderson Platoon, did you see that? The thing that French television did was played on CBS. You saw the people, you got to know them, and then you found out that some of them were already killed. Or the situation where a family can see their own son killed on television during the 7 o'clock news. So I think this is an enormous difference. Perhaps that's one place where the difference in what TV does to the psychology and involvement of people is most manifest. Ted?
The name of John Wayne just reminded me of a basic point. People pursue violence not wantonly, but as a quest for identity. This helps to understand war. But John Wayne he's the very archetype of Western individual violence in its quest for identity. Individual literate man imposes upon himself ordeals of violence and deprivation and discipline in order to discover who am I.
What would the difference be here then with corporate, with tribal identity?
Well, the Negro population is not interested in private identity any more than the Israeli or the Arabs. They want a corporate identity. I saw the, maybe a lot of you saw that German show the other night. It was a CBS news report on Germany. A pretty terrifying, a really terrifying thing, because here are millions and millions of very competent people desperate for an identity. Hitler gave them an identity, tribal, which they are now ashamed to recover or repeat, and they have no alternative in their own minds except a repeat of the Hitler thing, because he was a tribal man who gave Germany a corporate tribal identity, not a personal private one at all. Now, Hitler came out of the radio age. He was a product of radio. Radio in the 1920s created tribal man right here in North America on a big scale. The jazz age was a huge enterprise, a quest for corporate tribal identity. Gertrude Stein said, when she looked at her own generation, which could not possibly join this jazz baby enterprise, "You are all a lost generation." Hemingway used it as an epigraph in Farewell to Arms. Anyone over 20, in 1920, anybody over 20 belonged to the lost generation because they couldn't tribalize. They couldn't get turned on by radio. They're far too literate. Radio, when it reached Germany, had a very different effect from radio in North America. Germany is not all that literate. Germany has never lost touch with tribal, corporate life. The old traditions of those countries, including, lots of Yugoslav, other territories, very tribal. And I'm not using tribal here in a journalistic, pejorative, condescending sense. I'm using it technically. People who live by ear are tribal. All children are tribal because they all live by ear. They don't live by eye. But I'm not using the word tribal in any condescending sense at all. You may find this hard to get, but to me it is just a form of behavior based on the dominance of the ear rather than of the eye. And it's something that is happening to everyone in this room, including me, at the present time. We're all going back to the ear, all losing our visual orientation. And this I don't think of as an ideal. I don't think that things like this should be allowed to happen irresponsibly just because TV networks or radio networks find it convenient to exploit our sensory lives. We are living in a time in which it is possible to use the total human environment as a teaching machine. The evolutionary process, it no longer belongs to the biology of our bodies. Our bodies create these new environments, the extensions of our bodies create these new environments, like the electric one, And these are the location now of the evolutionary process. A new environment like TV or computer or telephone or radio can compress millions of years of evolution in seconds. What has been happening to us in the 20th century is that we have been going through many millions of years of evolution, biological evolution, psychological evolution, through the extension of our bodies to these new environments. The body doesn't fit into an environment anymore, it makes the environment. It makes that space. James Joyce has a phrase, which I'll put on the board because hard to get by ear alone. Joyce said of his Finnegan's Wake, "What the reader sees is not what the reader hears." And he wrote it that way, on two or three or five or six or 20 levels simultaneously. But this phrase I'll just put on the board in a moment.
Interesting, you should have to put it on the board. I thought we were all tribalized here, man.
I don't know, it's transitional.
Okay. Well, it might be right, actually. I would like to say something.
I encountered this morning a newspaper called Jewish News. I think it was that. And my attitude is tremendous veneration for the guy who pulled a six-day war and closed it then and did it properly. You know, I think if you're going to fight a war, that's the best way to fight it. But nevertheless, there is in New York a newspaper which is as vicious anti-Arab as any Arab newspaper I ever read. And I deprecate this, because I don't think that hatred on any side of this situation is going to solve anything. I'm just absolutely appalled at the kind of newspaper writing that went into this Jewish newspaper. And think about that, too, because we can play it both ways, you know, in terms of our world.
Excuse me. The liberal, literate world. The liberal world, by definition, is literate. And it regards all tribal areas, of course, as backward. This has nothing to do with the liberal point of view, because they're not even conscious of this.
Well, now their own children are more like those people they used to deprecate. I mean, almost every...
Well, this is the paradox. As we go tribal ourselves, the liberal has the rug pulled right out from under him, because the very thing he has deplored for a century is now happening to him. But Professor Carpenter is an anthropologist who belongs to, as it were, a professional group that has glorified tribal man for a long time. The one thing that professional group was not prepared for was for itself to become tribal. And that's what's happening to it.
Well, I have several comments. Before going to the tribal thing, I jotted these down and I throw them in as sort of footnotes if we can backtrack. That wonderful phrase, "all the news is fit to print," in the New York Times. You know, those newspapers like the New York Times that are really books printed on cheap paper are to be read silently. And the New York Times and the Christian Science Monitor and some of the Canadian newspapers are famous for typographical errors. When the thing reads all right, but it doesn't sound all right. Now, I'm sorry the circumstances prohibit me from giving you examples of this, but sometime read
to leave or what?
Read the New York Times aloud. It's marvelous. Some of the best humor in American history has appeared by mistake in their headlines. In talking about light through and the French techniques of Serret and others, Daguerre was famous in his day, not for his camera, but for his theater. And his theater was made, let me sketch it. There was an entrance here, you could come in here or here. It was circular, and there were two stages with curtains. And the audience sat in a theater that could be shifted so that the seats faced forward here. And you looked at this stage. Now the curtain would part, and a man in the ceiling would lit the skylight so that light would come down and hit a picture painted here. Then he would shift it, dropping the skylight here and lifting the skylight behind it so that you got light through. And when you did, the picture dissolved and you had a sequence to the picture you had first been seen. That is, if it were a battle scene, they would show you the evening after the battle, and you would see the dead line and position and so forth. Now, they achieved this technique by painting on a large piece of canvas and then putting small holes through it and painting the desired color on the inside of the hole so that the light would come through not only the canvas, the texture of the canvas, but through the holes themselves. Then, after you saw this dissolve, the curtain would fall and a man would crank the audience around so it faced this screen, and the curtains would part, they were changing the props here, so on. Daguerre went bankrupt with this because there was so little sunlight in Paris at the time. And
this is a matter of fact in my club. Business of, I'm sorry. This, as a matter of fact, is my problem. The business of trying to create a new film technique, which has not already been done, because the electric circus, the various things that move around the country are totally concerned with entertainment. And I am interested in the idea of moving these things over to education, but I don't know how to finance it, because I don't think education has that kind of money. I mean, entertainment does.
If the ushers will now pass among you, please.
War, as an educational institution, consists in sending our culture abroad to encounter alien cultures. That's the way Julius Caesar educated the Huns. Alexander the Great educated considerable parts of the world this way, by simply allowing these backward territories to see civilized legions, orderly organization, all visual, to see it in action. Yes, everything does. Didn't you know that everything works two ways? Literally.
Bring the feedback.
Oh, yeah. That's what's happening to us today. We're going sitars, Buddhas, inner trips instead of outer trips. The Western man is giving up the outer trip in favor of inner trips. It's the reverse. Oh, yes, the East had huge appeal to the West in the Middle Ages. The medieval period was very Oriental because of the Crusaders' contacts with the East. They found the East admirable. But, yeah. It's an ear world, not an eye world. Pardon? Yeah. I didn't get the last bit. Oh, well. This is the gigantic question of the medium and the message. The kids are getting the Oriental trip in many modes, but as above all from TV. This phrase I wrote on the board, the heliotropical not time, refers to the TV image as a sun radiating at the viewer, heliotropical, turning us all toward the eastern sun. Not time, meaning all times are simultaneous now, all cultures are simultaneous. There is no time that fills our focus. Many times, all times, just as in a dream, at night, nighttime, all that we ever were collectively is now simultaneous. There is no longer an historical time, there is only a not time left to mankind. Or a nighttime, or a dream world. But the old visual time, like clock time, is fragmented and segmented into little bits. That is what we call time. Time marches on, but also backwards, sideways, up and down. But to the print man, time simply marches on. There isn't any other direction possible for the print man. But for the ear man, time moves in all directions simultaneously.
Nice example of that is the way that some of the critics with a literary background looked at a film like 8 and a Half. Just a crowd that just could not figure the darn thing out, because it took time and treated past, present, and future as all being elements of this one man's consciousness, and it didn't have any of the old 10 minutes past 12, November, December-ness about it. Yeah.
We are kind of hung up because of our background, our education system, everything, many of the ones there. Well, to get away from this, might be very hot. I didn't see any of that. I've seen it back up at all. So you talk about inner trips, isn't that? They're talking about releasing their senses and using all their senses and focus on their senses.
Yeah.
Well, what actually is it any
This is what all children do all the time, and what all backward peoples have always done. They've never had any visual experience in our sense whatever. Now, we are in the position of being able to make a responsible choice in this particular decade about whether we want to program any part of the world from now on for civilization and visuality or not. Because if we allow the natural development and push, stress of our technologies to continue, there will be no visual area left in the world in, say, 10 years. There will be no civilization of any kind whatever in 10 years. Now, it's up to us. We're doing this to ourselves. No one's doing this to us. We're doing it to ourselves. And so we are in a position of being able to program the environment as a teaching machine. War is the use of the total environment as a teaching machine. The classroom uses just one little bit of environment as teaching machine. But war uses the whole culture as teaching machine. Another peculiarity related to the radio age and tribalization behind us. It's easy to see this now. It's way back there in the rearview mirror. But when the jazz babies reached the job plateau and began to make decisions, we suddenly discovered that they didn't have any goals. The radio age, the ear age, doesn't have goals. Only visual men have goals. People who play the total field, auditory style, and this is true of any tribal society, such people don't have goals in any sense whatever. They're living. The old Porgy and Bess theme, I got plenty of nothing, and nothing's plenty for me. This was the immediate prelude to the big slump. When you put a bunch of jazz babies into the decision-making positions, they suddenly discovered they didn't have any goals. And the depression followed at once. That was just radio. In 10 years from now, or 6 years, or five, the depression that we're preparing for ourselves when the TV generation reaches the job plateau will be correspondingly greater. The TV generation does not have goals because, man, they're living with all of themselves. No goals possible. The dropout is simply a person who has discovered that there's living. Why should he interrupt his education by going to school? This is what they say in Watts. This is a common phrase in Watts. Why should I interrupt my education by going to school? And this is the great message of the turned-on TV age. When you program the whole environment richly as educational machine, why go into that little nook or cranny called a schoolroom where you're going to be broken into little bits and study algebra?
You're going to get rid of all your audience right now, you know.
Oh. You mean that I hope you don't imagine that I'm advocating or favoring any of these developments. I regard the 20th century with horror. But I don't see any alternative but careful study for survival.
Yeah. May I speak to this? This is one of the things that I'm most concerned about, really, is that we have to move ourselves into the 20th century on this basis completely, that we do have to make a distinction between the kind of image-making that has been involved. And I would claim that we are moving back into a kind of iconography in terms of image-making, which is multi-leveled in terms of time and in terms of space. And this is the thing we have to understand.
Just the clothing that people wear.
That's right.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, by violence, not by doctrines. Oh, no, the war. The war made this possible. Yeah. All right. That was the age of Jackson. That was the age of rail. The war of 1870 was fought by rail. The Civil War between the states here was the first railway war in human history. It was fought by rail, and it was fought because of the rail. Because the South was completely opposed to railways and the lineality of the machine age that was coming upon them. And the North was pushing this new mechanized reality over them. The South was an agrarian tribal area where life was rich. My wife is a loyal Texan. I've always had a large admiration for Southern culture. But after all, nostalgically, the whole of North America is devoted to the South. As the world of all the great songs and dances, whatever. But this was a world where people lived. They didn't do things. They didn't have goals. They didn't get anywhere, you see. The North had goals. Yep. Yeah, for Vietnam, for example. If you try to say Vietnam is a goal, people say you're crazy. No. Commitment is not goal-oriented. It's involvement. You don't ask a man in swimming, what's your point of view with regard to swimming? That's meaningless. When you're really committed or involved, you can't have a point of view. I have a friend who spent the past year in Tanzania, and the first question I asked this very literate liberal when he came back from Tanzania, I said, do they have a point of view? And he said, absolutely none. No tribal group can have a point of view. They're committed. They're totally involved. You can't have a point of view when you're committed. It's like charity. Christian charity is not a point of view. It's total.
It's in swimming.
Huh? Yes, sir.
Are you going to say that the television is more of a reaction medium than an action medium? And I think they
No, I didn't say that. It's a total new environment.
In understanding media, you're developing the idea that the child doesn't watch the action, but he wants to think.
I haven't read Understanding Media recently. In fact, literally, not since it was published. I haven't seen one page or line of it since it was published. I've discovered quite a lot since then. Look, the first thing that happens on TV is the end of the star system. We grew up with movies. Star system. Visual. Twiggy is not a star. She's an icon. You can't get a star out of the movie, out of the TV world. You don't have TV stars. You have programs that are preferred. No stars. And the Ed Nortons and the Smothers Brothers are not stars at all in the old movie sense, but they're involving. And so you notice the kids today are more interested in the technique of humor and performance of these people than they are in just looking at them as blazing images of photographic kind. No, the cool world, involving world of TV doesn't permit star system. Yes, sir.
How would you explain the resurgence among the younger generation, the cult of Hobart fans, or Bob Gable fans that come up?
Well, the rearview mirror is the place that most people look for reassurance. Always look back one phase to orient yourself. This is the normal human reaction. People never look at the present. They always look back one phase. So there's a great nostalgia and feeling of security when you encounter the old stars. Didn't we see yesterday the image, an old star image? Hedy Lamarr, was it? Hedy? Or who was the German actress who appeared in yesterday's? Who? Marlena. The great movie image of the 20s is thinking of doing a Broadway debut after 25 years of absolute silence. But the world of involvement doesn't permit this kind of hotted up, externalized stardom.
Well, Bogart would be, seems to me just on these lines, Bogart's a very contemporary type. Not a highly visual. A good example last night was how, if anybody just passed by on their dial, Rock Hudson in a musical. Physical. I mean, the TV screen just spat him out. He was intolerable to look at, really. He was so bad. And again, his type, the old, very clean-cut profile, slick, looking star is all gone. I mean, David Hemmings and the kids that turn on, the younger kids today, the guy from Uncle, McCallum, the types like Rock Hudson can't survive in this thing. They're looking for shaggy, indefinite, cool kind of things, you know?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
An area for all of you to watch in this matter and for absolutely first-hand new research, sports. When I grew up, baseball was a daily subject of conversation in every family. We knew all the batting averages and all the stars. And they meant a lot to us. Today, Willie May, well, most people can take him or leave him. But he isn't a star in that old, all-devouring sense of the 20s. Heavyweight boxing, similarly, is finished. Wrestling comes in because it's involving, but the punching, hot stuff, finished. Baseball is finished. It belongs to the old culture.
Like the railroad.
Like the railroad.